True North on AM 1460 and FM 101.1. The Answer. Saturday mornings at 8 or via podcast anytime. Now, let's get into it with your host, Dirk Hobbs.
Good morning, Southern Colorado. It is Saturday, March 11th, 2023, here in gorgeous Southern Colorado. What a blessed place to live. I am so excited to be here in the studio with you this morning. Breathe deep, my fellow Coloradans. Just look to the west and remind yourself why we tolerate these winters. It's not too bad, actually. Just ask the people up north, way up north, the Great White North. Well, it's good to be here in the studio with you all. You're listening to True North. I'm your host, Dirk Hobbs. What we do here at North and in True North, the radio program, is we talk about what is going on in our community. So we are business, real estate, lifestyle, and the people who are making it happen. And we are here in the studio with one of those people this morning. We'll get to that in just a minute. But inside each edition of North, you'll find great stories on the people who are advancing our community forward. They're running great businesses. They have great venues for us to go work and play in. And it's just an exciting place to hang out. Get a bead on what's going on in our community, both from a business perspective as well as a real estate perspective. So dive in. If you want to grab your complimentary copy each month, just go to coloradomediagroup.com/subscribe, and we'll put one in your mailbox. No charge. Not ever. So it's just brought to you by the great people that are in there, and we hope you enjoy it. So, and if you'd like to nominate somebody for a story, or if you have a story to tell that you want to get out there to about half the community, that's about how many folks we're reaching each month. Give me a call, 719-330-7448, and you can also go to info@coloradomediagroup.com. So anyway, we are in the studio this morning. We have a series that we're doing. We're interviewing six of the top contenders for the mayor job that is coming up for renewal here. April 4th is the big election day, so let's not be passive about this. Let's get out there and vote. But what we wanted to do here at North is give you an opportunity to meet everybody that is running for mayor, that has been in public service for a considerable amount of time and has a pretty good idea of what's going on in our community on a multitude of fronts. So public safety, water, affordable housing, all those heavy lift topics we've been banging on for the last couple of weeks here. So in the studio this morning, we have Mr. Tom Strand. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Dirk. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm glad to have you here, man.
I'm glad to be here.
This is going to be a good exchange, I can tell, and we're going to have some fun getting to know you. But break it down for us. I mean, you've been in public service here about 13 years.
Yes, I have.
And a lot of big jobs. Tell us about them.
Yeah, I retired after a 30-year career in the Air Force, which started at Pete Field.
Okay.
Retired in 2005, right at the beginning of the year in 2005, and I was going to catch trout and get my golf score down. That was the plan. I was watching what was going on in our school districts, and primarily School District 11. A lot of issues, you know, between the board members on the district and the superintendent. And so I decided to run for the District 11. I actually was appointed to fill a vacancy when there was a recall of a couple of members on the District 11 school board. I filled that vacancy and then later ran and was elected, my first elected position in 2007. And I served for 5 years on the District 11 school board, both as vice president and president of that school board, trying to focus on the students and the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
After I finished that, I then was kind of watching what was going on in the city with our first strong mayor Steve Bach, and the relationship between the nine city council members and noticed that it was fractured. It was not working very well.
Yeah, tough season.
I ended up having breakfast with a guy running for mayor at the time by the name of John Suthers, who was finishing up as attorney general up in Denver. Mm-hmm. And we had a long talk about, you know, what we thought we could do to make the city more collaborative between both the mayor's office as the executive and the legislative branch, which is city council. So I was elected in 2015 as an at-large, one of the three at-large positions for city council. Out of the nine, we have six districts and three at-large. And I ended up serving at that time as vice chair and chair of utilities because many people don't understand city council members are dual-hatted, both with our utilities,
That's right.
which
Yep.
this year is a $1.6 billion operation for utilities. So I was vice chair of utilities and then chair of utilities. And I was there when we made the decision that we were going to close our coal-burning Drake plant downtown not later than 2035. And mm-hmm. here in 2022, we ended up closing Drake.
Yep.
So that was terrific.
No more plume in
no
the sky.
More plume. And it wasn't really pollution, but it yeah. sure looked like it. So I was vice chair and chair when Jerry Forte, who had been the CEO for about 9 years, retired. Mm-hmm. And then hired Rahm Benjamin when I was chair of utilities. And that was about 4.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then I was reelected in my position in 2019 as an at-large city council member. And since then, I have been the pro tem, kind of the deputy to Richard Scorman, who was the president of city council. And I am currently the president of city council. With the eight other city council members that I work with on a daily basis.
Yep. Lots going on at city council. You guys work hard over there. We appreciate you guys. You know, I was in a process when J.W. Roth was sitting in front of you guys in that whole concert venue up north, and I'm just watching this process. And
For the amphitheater.
For the amphitheater,
yeah.
That's right. And you know, it was amazing to see community citizens, you know, citizens of our community. Because you guys don't get paid a lot over there, right?
We, by the way, let me just make a quick pitch for that. We get a stipend of $6,250 a year, which yep. is about a $500 check a month.
Right.
And
tip.
There is going to be an effort either this next November or in 2024 mm-hmm. To have an increase.
Yeah.
So we can attract younger people, not just retired people.
And it's amazing because that is pretty much you know, gas money for the month, but it's your time and effort and attention, all of you sitting on council listening to that. You know, some of them are great issues, some of them are like, wow, is yeah. this really in front of me right now?
Right.
But well, let's take a half a step back and get to know you personally. So
okay.
You hail from what part of the country?
Yeah, born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, Cleveland, Ohio, when I was growing up and going to high school, was 1.1 million people
All
in
right.
that city because of the steel mills and the heavy industry.
That's right.
Today, it's about 400,000
yeah.
People have left. So it's kind of a reverse of what's going on in Colorado Springs mm-hmm. because when I got here in the mid-70s with the Air Force, and I'll mention that, we were about 130,000, and now we're 500,000. And so we're doing the opposite of what's happening in Cleveland. So I left there, went to Bowling Green and studied business and pre-law, mm-hmm. went to law school at Toledo in Ohio. And then I was in ROTC and got commissioned. They gave me an educational delay to go to law school. And then I ended up coming to Colorado Springs Peak Field as my first assignment.
Peak Field, yeah.
In the mid-1970s.
Right on. And where'd you go to law school?
University of Toledo Law School.
Okay.
The Rockets.
The Rockets,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
Not a bad basketball club.
No.
Periodically, right?
Yeah.
But then you went on and did a little more.
Yeah, during my Air Force career, they selected me to go to George Washington University in Washington, D.C. to get a Master's of Law, an LLM, in labor and employment law during my 30-year career as an Air Force JAG.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, thank you for your service, sir. We appreciate that. That's not an easy job out there. So your life in Colorado really began when?
You know, well, it began when we arrived here in the mid-75. You mm-hmm. know, I arrived here and I was the Area Defense Council at Peak Field. At that time, marijuana, you know, was illegal everywhere. If an airman got caught with a joint of marijuana, he went to jail for 1 year.
Wow.
The other big change back then was if an airman, mostly males, had issues with their sexuality, we court-martialed them for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to believe that in one guy's life, so many things have changed and come you know, full circle.
Right.
But anyway, finished, had 17 assignments around the world, 10 years overseas, and ended up running the JAG and Paralegal School in Montgomery, Alabama before I retired to come here. So my interest in education and development came from running the JAG and Paralegal School in Montgomery, Alabama, and then retired in 2005. And since then, I have been really involved with trying to make this a better city and a better community.
And indeed you have. Thank you for your work on city council. Thank you for your work in the Air Force. Now, how about personally? I mean, what blows your hair back? I heard the fishing pitch earlier.
Yeah. I currently have 3 children, 1 stepchild and 2 children, one in Detroit, Michigan, one in Austin, Texas, and one in Fort Collins. I have 5 grandchildren. All around the world. And what I love doing now is I love fishing, fly fishing, and mm-hmm. catching trout.
Mm-hmm.
And I love getting out and hiking.
Yep.
Skiing is kind of in my past now. Don't want to shake up my knees and ankles. But I do play golf during the summer season, usually once a week.
Oh, very good. Well, we're going to get into why you think this job is for you in the next quarter. All right. So we're going to tackle some of the key issues that seem to be refrains in town, because we are a city on the move. We're growing and we're getting, you know, big city problems in some areas, big city challenges that we need to overcome and pay close attention to. So appreciate you being here. We're going to break here in just a minute, but I want to remind everybody the election is April 4th. So this Friday, March 10th, you should have, they dropped the ballots in the mailbox. And so Saturday here, this afternoon or Monday, you should have the ballot in your hand. And I want to make an encouragement to everybody out there. Look from top to bottom on the ballot. So don't just look at the top 2 names or so, but look at from top to bottom. Check out the websites of each individual candidate. In our case here, we have Mr. Strand, Tom Strand. He's our city councilman, but the website for him is strandformayor.org. You can reach him personally at tomstrand19@yahoo.com. And if you want to give him a phone call, 719-210-1607. That's 719-210-1607. And but make sure you take a look at what they have to say on their website. So we're back in a minute with Tom Strand.
I got a nightmare phone call that no parent wants to receive.
Someone hit me going 60 miles an hour.
Dr. Ramos came highly recommended. When I showed him the x-rays, he immediately knew exactly what was wrong.
We've had a tremendous experience with Ramos Law. Really, I could not be happier.
Having the car accident was an accident. Finding Ramos Law was no accident.
Injured in a car accident? Ramos Law can help. RamosLaw.com.
And we're back here in the studio, True North. You're listening to Dirk Hobbs and Tom Strand talk about the mayor's job coming up. April 4th is our big election day here. Make your voice heard, folks. Vote. The ballots should have dropped in the mail on Friday. You should see them in your mailbox either today or Monday, maybe Tuesday at the latest. So take a look at those. Look up and down the ballot. Look at the issues and make a decision. So tell me, Tom, we've got some serious issues in our community. Like I said, we're growing. We're expanding, and with that, we have to be very conscientious of some things, one of which is a real hot-button issue is a public safety. I know this is a passion play for you.
It is, absolutely, Dirk. 8 years on city council, we've done a lot of great things.
Yes, you have.
We've increased our police department and our fire department. We've opened up 2 new fire stations. We've combined the county and city folks that work wildfires and floods, which you know, is important. They're now a joint group. But I want to talk about police in particular.
Okay.
Today we've got about 750 sworn police officers. We've got my third police chief since in my 8 years is Adrian Vasquez. He's the current police chief. Mayor Suthers allowed me to be involved with that review and selection process. So we've got about 750 sworn police officers. The problem is we need about 850. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got people, our response times to, you know, the first and second category of offenses, which are the most serious criminal acts, sometimes can take 13 or 14 minutes to get there. So we have got to work on what I consider a new program that I want to do with UCCS and Colorado College in terms of creating a police college. That would create, a two-year associate kind of degree, and I've floated this with them. We haven't finalized anything, but I think we could put people into an associate program, two-year police college, and get a lot of young people, men and women, out of both out of the military that are separating out of the military, military police, security police from the Air Force, as well as out of high school that would go into this program that would want to get involved with criminal justice. The other thing we're doing, and we're going to start in July, is our academies that we run from CSPD. Instead of running one or two a year, we're going to run them continuously. And we generally have somewhere between 30 and 40 people in those programs. And I think between the academy and a police college, we can start to recruit the numbers of police officers that we need and make sure they're trained properly and that they have the right background.
Being a police officer in today's world is not terribly enticing for a lot of reasons. I mean, these folks, by and large, there's always a few apples that tend to, sour the appearance of what they are.
Yeah, the whole barrel.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's just that they seem to have to go through so much criticism just to get the job done. And I can't imagine they're not tentative. So in your curriculum and in the things you're discussing with the university and the academy, is this part of it is to try to attract people back to the profession? Because it used to be, when you were an officer, that was a noble career.
It was.
And it still is. But
the first police chief when I got here was Pete Carey. Mm-hmm. He told me that when he applied to become a police officer some 40 years ago, that there would be 1,000 to 1,500 applicants, for 20 to 30 positions.
Wow.
Currently, for 30 to 40 positions, we might only get 200 applicants.
Wow.
So you're absolutely right, Dirk, about, this is an area now that I think a lot of young people and even middle-aged people feel that this is something that, they don't want to get into this kind of a conflict with the community and a profession that is, in fact, under attack every time.
Yeah.
Every time I see a police officer, I treat them like I do military people when I thank them for their service in the community. And I would encourage anybody listening, when you see a police officer, whether she's on a motorcycle or whether she's or he's walking around downtown or in a car, thank them for their service that they give.
Does that make a difference? I mean, when
it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Currently, police officers, right out of the box, make about $70,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So I do not think it's compensation and benefits.
That's not the lure.
I think it's more about, whether they're appreciated in our community and respected.
Yeah.
And that's what I would encourage people to do going forward. So that's the area we've got to go. I met with about six police officers just recently between 1 and 6 years service. All of them are considering leaving.
Oh,
so it's a situation that, people listening, if you want your relatives, your children, your grandchildren to become police officers, you'd probably take a step back before you would encourage them to do that.
So why were they saying, we're rethinking this?
They, again, it's mostly because when they go out in the community, they feel under attack, even by law-abiding citizens. Mm-hmm. We get situations where they never know when they say goodbye to their loved ones, whether it's their parents or their spouses, whether they're going to come back. Mm-hmm. So most of the ones that I talk to who are young are just readdressing whether or not, they work different shifts all the time. A lot of times they'll get the Christmas, day shift. Their opportunity to be with family members for birthdays and anniversaries are less than a lot of other people, much like the military.
Right.
So You know, I just try and work with them and thank them for everything that they do. I think the neighborhood watch program in our neighborhoods ought to be reinforced.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to do more to get neighbors involved so that they are reporting crimes, you know, more quickly. We have trouble getting 911 operators. We don't have a full staff of 911 operators. And again, I don't think it's pay and allowances and benefits. I think it's more, you know, being involved with law enforcement.
Okay. Well, tell us what you would do more specifically on not only the university and academy front, but what are some of the logistical elements that we need to tackle for public safety?
You know, in addition to CSPD, CSFD, is we've just funded some more people. About 80% of the fire department calls that they get are not structural fires. They're for health issues,
sure,
and well-being issues, and people like Tom having a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And
don't do that, Tom.
No, don't want to do that. And so, you know, what we need, and we've increased, city council has increased the number of people, the EMTs that go out. We need to have more people involved that are in the social worker and counseling kind of thing that go out with the fire department. We've opened up two new fire stations, and we've got two that we're going to be opening up probably in the next 2 years in terms of fire stations. But, you know, in that area, we just, again, we don't seem to have the same problem with CSFD in terms of recruiting and retaining.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to go back to CS about, you know, in the police department, about every month we lose 7 or 8 police officers. Some are just regular retirements. They've had 25 or 30 years as police officers, and they're moving on to something else in their life. But a lot of them, as I mentioned with the younger ones, are attriting out just because their families do not feel that they're supportive anymore of this, and they don't feel when they're in the community that they're respected to the degree that they would like to be.
Wow.
We've got the cameras now, you know, that kind of record everything, whether it's a stop. I would encourage citizens to do ride-alongs.
Mm-hmm.
I've done about 5 of those in the last 8 years.
Get that
where I ride along, and I try and do weekends and nights, which are going to be much more active and busy. And, you know, they try and make sure you stay out of the fray, so keep you in the car. The other big group is the emergency management office.
Right.
We've combined both the county and city emergency management office. Currently, Jim Reed is running that. He's about to retire, but he's a great guy. They need more personnel there, I think, to work on mitigation for wildfires, to work on the we've come up with this new zone situation for evacuations. But, you know, we also have flooding that we have to worry about with emergency management office, and I meet with them usually monthly.
Got it. Well, you've been hanging out with Tom Strand and Dirk Hobbs here on True North. It is a great day here in Southern Colorado. We're going to get back into some of the other issues that I know Tom wants to get to, namely, obviously, water, economic development, you know, smart growth in our community. So all those things, you know, we're going to get into in the next quarter here. But, Tom, I'm going to throw you a quick curveball here, brother.
Sure.
Tell me, what is your jam song in the car?
Yeah, my jam song in the car, I love the Bee Gees, and I love the song Staying Alive.
No kidding, Staying Alive. Well, let's hear it for Tom and Staying Alive. You're old school, brother. The Bee Gees.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Barry's hanging in there.
Barry's hanging
in
there.
He and I are going to go on a road trip. By the way, I take guitar lessons. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
All right, very good. Well, we're back with Tom Strand in just a few minutes.
The news and events that matter to you. AM 1460 and FM 101.1. The Answer. It's okay. You may look the other way.
We can try to understand the New York Times of Bethlehem. And we're back in the studio. You're listening to True North on AM 1460 and 101.1 FM. The Answer. Thank you for dialing in. Thank you for taking a hike with us this morning here in beautiful Southern Colorado. I'm your host, Dirk Hobbs, and I am sitting here with City Council President, Mr. Tom Strand. Thank you for being in the studio, sir. Appreciate
you. Thank you very much, Dirk. My pleasure.
No, I'm glad you're here. And I was just getting a picture in my mind of you jamming out to the Bee Gees in the car. I love that. I love that. Those were some great days.
They were.
Great music, and really appreciate that. All right, we kind of tapped on the public safety topic, big topic. We're probably not done with that entirely. We'll probably continue to reference back to that. because we've had an inordinate amount of homicides in our community this year, Tom. I know you were telling me earlier in the pregame that we've gone from 10 to this last year.
The last year the numbers are about 58.
Wow.
Homicides that we've had. The other dangerous thing on I-25 and other of our roads are how many people have been injured or hurt or killed on the highways. And those numbers are also in the 50 level.
Yeah.
So you take your life in your hands when you get behind the wheel, it seems like here. And, it's just people are driving recklessly around here.
As an attorney, and certainly as a JAG, I mean, you are obviously familiar with the concept of right and wrong. Seems our culture wants to debunk what we knew as right and wrong. And this poses a problem to police officers. It poses a problem to judges. It poses a problem to law-abiding citizens. And so what do you tell a police officer? Because I know you have a lot of interaction with them.
I do. And I saw some just last night at one of the forums we were at. There were two that they were there, just for security, I guess, when we were at Irving, school here in town. What I tell them is, they need to keep their head up and they need to know their city council and their mayor is behind them.
Yep.
And that we're going to support them and we're going to do everything we can to ensure that they don't have any individual liability if they have to make a split, second decision, whether to use pepper spray or whether, God forbid, to use a firearm.
Mm-hmm. I
talk to them all the time about the fact that, they are the backbone of this community. I think safety is so important to people. There are a lot, especially a lot of our women, that at night they're afraid to go to ATMs anymore. They're
sure.
Afraid to walk their dog in their neighborhood if it's nighttime. They don't necessarily want to be in parking garages. So we've got to change that. And I think our legislature at the state level has made some offenses like auto theft and breaking into cars more misdemeanors than they are felonies. And you get a ticket, when you steal a car or you break into a car. So we have got to work closely with our legislators in Denver and the state House and Senate to make sure they understand that law and order, is so important that, I understand the whole issue of having restorative justice and giving people a chance to turn their lives around, especially young people that are teenagers. When I was on the District 11 school board, I got involved with restorative justice so that we could work with suspensions and people who were thrown out of school for, misconduct and violations. But once you get to be an adult and you get involved with attacking people in some ways, you need to be held accountable.
Indeed, you do. So do you, on a philosophical, personal level, I mean, how do you reconcile all the things that are going on, both with our justice system and just the general morality that's out there? And how do you translate that into, your work on city council and some of the other jobs you've done?
Dirk, probably about a third of our population in some way is connected with our military. We have 5 military installations here with, Cheyenne Mountain, Fort Carson, the Air Force Academy, Schriever and Peterson, and people that are family members or retirees. That group, is used to discipline. I think kind of, we've gotten away from being accountable and being disciplined in things and, wanting to work. So it's easy for an older fella to kind of make, take some shots at the younger generations, the millennials. But I really think that we need to have more responsibility and accountability. And I think even our millennials would like to see that.
Yeah.
We don't want to see situations where people are bonded out. And put on probation too soon. I think our system tends today, and this is just Tom Strand's opinion in 2023, more focused on people that are violators than people that are victims.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to change that. We need to go back to supporting our victims, whether it's in issues of domestic relations or it's victims of, identity theft and things of that nature. These are areas we have to focus on. I think our mayor can be a leader every time she or he goes out and they talk about these things at ribbon cuttings and, You know, we had one recently for this new permit program that we have where you can go and develop a new business and go to a website on the city and find out all the things you have to do to set up your new donut shop in terms of licenses and what sure. you have to do with permits.
Yeah, Life 101.
Yep.
Well, let's move on from public safety and let's start getting into the affordable housing, because I know this is another passion play for you. Affordable housing, homelessness, and overall economic development, you and I discussed, those are kind of tied at the hip. How do you view these issues, and where do you want to take it?
Yeah, you know, Dirk, there's no doubt about that. Again, you know, growing to what I used to consider kind of a village atmosphere in Colorado Springs
from 10
or 20 years ago, and even more, to now, we're the 39th largest city in the United States. We're a big city with problems that, you know, come with more people. And I think one of the big issues now is affordable housing, whether it's rentals, you know, in multifamily units, or whether it's housing with single family homes. We've kind of, in the last 12 to 18 months, that has really cooled off. I am on the regional building department as the chairman of the regional building department for Colorado Springs. So I see how many permits and licenses there are for these new houses with our builders and developers. And it has certainly slowed down, but we got to a point in 2021 and 2022 where we were just blossoming in terms of, you know, every month houses would go up 3 or 4% and rent would go up 3 or 4%. And even now for a two-bedroom apartment, you're over $2,000. You know, that's not affordable for a lot of people.
Yep.
And houses have gone, you know, from $300,000 and $400,000 to $500,000 to $700,000. I think that's starting to come down again and correcting itself. But with interest rates going from 2 to 5%, you know, for a mortgage, our young people are really struggling. And when we hire teachers and we hire people that are in the hospitality, you know, out at the Broadmoor or any of the big, you know, hotels and restaurants, we really have a problem with keeping those people and allowing them to have a roof over their head.
Right.
I think for police officers and firefighters, they're in the same situation. So I want to focus on what we can do to, you know, provide more affordable housing, and I can talk to that.
So what can a mayor do about affordable housing specifically? I mean, how do you get those $2,000 rent charges, you know, to be more in line?
You know, what we can do, the mayor's got a small staff that works with HUD, you know, the federal housing organization. We work with, you know, tax incentives that we have for urban renewal, you know, situations. I'm on the urban renewal board here. So the mayor can get involved again, I think, with reducing taxes, making permitting processes better, working with utilities so that the hookups, which can be thousands of dollars for both electrical, gas, and water hookups, bringing those down to a more affordable rate. So I think the mayor and city council can work closely in bringing those amounts down, looking at more smaller units, you know, so that instead of 1,000, you know, square foot apartments, we have maybe 500 square foot apartments. I think there's a lot we can do to make things affordable, and I plan to do that if I'm elected mayor.
Wonderful. Well, you've been around the community for a while, and you've certainly held some positions of authority and prestige. You've been on the utilities board. You helped with the Drake closure and move that forward. 30 years of active duty service as an attorney, JAG officer, District 11 school board, city council president right now. You've been elected twice to that job. And of course, the Urban Renewal Board, we're just kind of scratching the surface here. So
yeah.
Been there, done that, got a few T-shirts, do you?
Yeah, I do. And that doesn't mention, you know, our tourist organization, Visit Colorado Springs.
That's
I'm
right.
on their board, too.
Oh, very good. Well, we certainly appreciate your service and dedication to this community. Folks, if you want to get to know Tom Strand more, check out his website, strandformayor.org. You can also reach him by phone, 719-210-1607. You can also email Tom. He'll take your message, tomstrand19@yahoo.com. And get to know the gentleman here as well as the other candidates. We've got a big election coming April 4th. Your ballot should be in your hand this weekend, if not Monday or Tuesday of this coming week. Make sure you look up and down the ballot, folks, and get to know each and every one of your candidates. We're sitting here with Tom Strand, who's running for mayor. And We're gonna have another little segment here with the Bee Gees. Maybe not Staying Alive, but what's another one you love?
Another one is More Than a Woman.
More Than a Woman. Oh my! I just offended a lot of people with what I just did there.
I doubt it.
Anyway, we're back with Tom Strand here in just a few moments.
One critical fact that needs to be established is that your injuries were caused by the accident incident you were involved in. For your case to have merit, it must be made clear that had you not been in the crash in the first place, you wouldn't have been hurt. This is one of the most important steps in the entire process, and leaving it to anyone but an expert is a serious mistake. Ramos Law, doctor, lawyer, partner, combining medical and legal knowledge for better outcomes for you.
All right, we're back with Tom Strand here in the studio. You're listening to True North on AM 1460, 101.1 FM. The Answer. Thanks for dialing in. Appreciate joining you on your hike or walk with the dogs or little biking action this morning. But we appreciate you listening here to True North. And you can find us online at coloradomediagroup.com. Take a look at us there, and also check out the Salem media stations, all of them, 102.7, 100.7, lots going on. So, but this conversation is around City Councilman Tom Strand and his bid for mayor this April 4th, big election for us. And this is an important election, folks. This is our next chief executive for the city of Colorado Springs, and they have to have their eye on the ball. And clearly, Tom has seen a lot. He's done a lot for this community in a variety of capacities throughout town. And he knows the working apparatus of the community. And I certainly appreciate his service both in the military and now as an executive on city council. And tell us, you know, we started talking about homelessness and affordable housing the last quarter, Tom, And we got to the affordable housing piece and how a mayor can actually institute change and create solutions for folks who are working in the service industry and teachers and, you know, the folks that don't necessarily have six-figure incomes to have a good quality of life here in town and still afford to live here and not have to go elsewhere. Talk to us a little bit about how that ties to homelessness and what are some of the solutions you're proposing around that specific topic?
Because it's getting heavy. You know, Dirk, this is a problem. I've got some emails just this week about people on trails and paths and when they run into these camps that are along our streams and waterbeds, which, by the way, we have an ordinance saying you can't camp near any water area. Mm-hmm. But enforcing that is problematic for our police department and our HOT team, our homeless outreach team, as they do that. But, you know, I've been watching this for the 18 years that I've been retired and back in Colorado Springs focused on our problems. And every February, we do a point in time study of how many people are homeless, you know, without roofs over their heads. And I remember the one in when I came on 8 years ago was about 2,200 in February were determined to be homeless. And I'm not even sure that that's an accurate number, but it's the best we can do when we're counting noses. 2 years ago when we did this, and I haven't seen the latest one this past February, the number went down to about 1,400 or 1,500 people that were homeless. So you can just pat ourselves on the back and say we're doing a much better job. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true. I honestly think we've got populations of homeless, and there's different ones. We've got both the Marion House with Catholic Charities and our folks that work with Mount Carmel, which deal mostly with military families.
Great organizations.
That work out. And we look at the, you know, what I consider the low-hanging fruit are both, single mothers and single fathers with children that are out there that are put out in the street either because maybe they've had medical bills that have been overwhelming, but really nothing that they could control. And now they're out there with children. And those are the ones I think we reach out to with, Catholic Charities and the Marion House, as well as Mount Carmel, with their military families to help them and get them into housing. Then there's a group of people that are in the next group of homeless that have got mental and behavioral health issues, and you often see them walking around downtown talking up to the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll be talking to somebody. They either have those behavioral and mental health problems where we don't have the professionals to really deal with them. And if we put them in our jail here run by the sheriff's department, they don't have the skill level to help them. They're just being held, you know, in a facility, essentially. The other big problem are substance and drug abuse, you know, where they're into alcohol or drug abuse problems and they need rehabilitation. And we don't have the facilities to help them with rehabilitating their abuse because they're addicted to different things. The last group that I see out there, and maybe it's the smallest group, are the won'ts. They're the won'ts. They want to live out there. They're, in some cases, criminals. Mm-hmm. They steal from one another. They steal from the community. They threaten the community. They often come across when they're asking for donations or making requests for money to intimidate people. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones I think we need to really kind of, you know, root out of here. And we can, you know, arrest them and make sure that they don't threaten people in our downtown and our shopping areas. So the homeless population is one we need focus on. I'll tell you one of the things I do differently than the current mayor. We've had two people now that are full-time employees of the city, one at a time, one male and now a female, that work with the homeless population on behalf of the city government. They work for the chief of staff. They should work for the mayor, directly for the mayor, and they should report to the mayor on a weekly basis of what they're doing, what they're seeing, what they need, what kind of resources they need. And so I would have that individual work for me, not for the chief of staff. The other thing, our homeless outreach team, we've got about 10 officers that are full-time out there, and they work with another group that kind of cleans up these camps where you got tons of garbage, mm-hmm. you know, and trash, and we go in and we clean them up, and we have dumpster after dumpster of stuff. You know, that group, again, needs to work for the mayor, you know, going forward. About 10 homeless outreach officers are about half of what we need currently. So we need to go out and recruit people to go into that work and have about 20 that are out there, you know, making sure the camps, you know, are not established. And we have problems on private property when they're set up. If it's public private property, we can move them out.
Yep.
But this homeless issue is a big deal.
Yep.
And it makes our community, when we have visitors and tourists here, it makes us look less desirable than we are. And we get all these accolades, the best city for young people to be here, the best city for military people to retire. But then a lot of people walk around downtown on Bijou and, you know, on Kiowa and that area downtown, and they kind of wonder, are we really that good of a city?
Indeed. Well, we are, but we have some mature problems right now that we need to address. And it sounds like you've got some wiring there in your mind for putting those people directly in touch with the mayor. That efficiency would do what specifically? To wire those people directly to the mayor instead of a chief of staff?
I think what it would do is the mayor then would have, when he goes out, and Mayor Southers has been terrific over the last years. I don't think, you know, there's a day he doesn't give a speech about mm-hmm. some kind of new organization or new company or new business that's coming in, or talk about what we're doing in Parks and Recreation, or talk about what we're doing with this new permit program.
Sure.
Or, you know, so I think that direct contact with the mayor ensures that the mayor is more focused when she or he's making, you know, speeches
those
to the public,
decisions, yeah.
And when he gives the annual report, that he talks about this in a way that we just don't talk about our successes, but we talk about our challenges.
Yep, indeed. Well, speaking of challenges, we have a water challenge. Well, at least we think we do.
Yeah.
So unpack that real quick, and then I'm going to give you a few minutes to make your case.
Okay, thanks, Dirk. You know, I've made 5 trips with utilities up into the mountains to look at our reservoirs and what we do with water. We bring in the majority of our water. We don't have a river here like Denver does.
Correct. Yeah.
And a lot of other cities. And so, you know, we bring in the majority of our water from the reservoirs and coming in from, you know, over Pikes Peak. And then from the Colorado River and the Arkansas rivers, and we know we've got issues with, I've learned a lot about water law. It's a huge area. People, you know, they may argue about different things, but they fight about water, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's a real problem that we have to be sensitive to. We recently passed at a 5-4 vote in city council a water ordinance, which says that we need 128% of the water that we, in fact, have available on a daily basis to make sure we have this buffer. And that those of us that are here, you know, have gotten here 10, 20, 40, 50 years ago, make sure that when we turn on the faucet, we've got water. And when we want to take care of our lawns and grass, we've got water. My personal opinion is I think that buffer is excessive. And I think we have a greater housing issue right now than we do a water issue. I think it's real easy to get nervous and scared about not having water,
all right,
you know, to take a shower or, you know, to take care of feeding your dogs with it. So I would like to see a study, and we're beginning one, working with the county and Fountain and other municipalities that are around city Colorado Springs. And we're looking at about an 8 to 9 month study so that we really know the science of what we need going forward and what we, you know, what's maybe over the top and too conservative. Mm-hmm. When I came on the board of directors for utilities, we flipped the switch on the Southern Delivery System, which is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars we spent on that, bringing water in from Pueblo. That is a system that allows you to bring water, but it doesn't provide the water. It just provides the capability of bringing the water in. So when I thought SDS was going to solve our problems for the next 20 or 30 years, that was not the case. So we need to lean on this group that's going to do the study, bring in a consultant, and I think by the end of the year, we'll know exactly what our needs are so that we can approve some more annexations. And the annexations of property that are in and around Colorado Springs will provide more housing and hopefully more affordable housing.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm going to give you 2 uninterrupted minutes.
Okay.
Of Tom Strand for mayor. Go.
All right. I think whoever votes starting next week, you know, after the 10th, you'll have, you know, about 14 days to get your vote in.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, 20, maybe 24 days.
Yep.
I think you have to look at the candidates that are running, not only for mayor, but for city council. And you need to trust them. And I'm going to tell you what the trust, the acronym, stands for me in terms of trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the new candidates don't, you know, think having experience as a political person is a bad thing. But for me, it's the tenacity. That's the T, somebody that's fought for things. I've fought for puppy mills, you know, and puppy legislation. I think it's reliable. I have responded in 8 years to every phone call that I've gotten, every email and every text. I think it's understanding issues, you know, whether it's an issue that we're dealing with, like the amphitheater and what problems that might cause for the neighborhoods. I think it also deals with someone that's stable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is there when you need them and you can watch them and you can watch, you know, all of my time on council and the board of directors is televised and on tape. And finally, somebody that's time tested, you know, that's been there, that's made decisions, you know, in the past that we look at, whether it's for water, whether it's for dealing with, you know, our drug problems that we have and items like that. Trust that person that you're going to vote for these next elections.
Thank you for making that case, Mr. Strand. You can find him at strandformayor.org, 719-210-1607, or email him at tomstrand19@yahoo.com. You've been listening to City Council President Tom Strand make his case for mayor, and we appreciate you joining us here in the studio, Tom. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Folks, we're going to leave you with an oldie but a goodie this month, or this this week. This is Pink Floyd at Pompeii. So check it out. Go to your YouTube channel. Type in Pink Floyd at Pompeii. It's an amazing concert. And if you're a Pink Floyd fan on any level, my sister and brother-in-law actually introduced me to this video, and I got to tell you, it is extraordinary. Both the visual components and then just some of those great riffs and David Gilmour and all those guys. So check them out online. I'm your host, Eric Hobbs. This has been True North with Tom Strand. We'll see you next week with Mr. Daryl Glenn.
Been listening to True North with your host, Dirk Hobbs. Saturday mornings at 8 on AM 1460 and FM 101.1. The Answer.